begin this morning with some of his words, some of that inspiration that opened a way, continued a way that's been opening since the beginning of humankind. Mm-hmm. Kabir had put together some pages and maybe I'll just begin with this prayer, such a beautiful prayer that is on the first page that you all have. You could read along if you wish or just listen. If they have passed out, okay. Could take a moment just to let those be passed out. We have so many gifts in every moment, and just to be able to sit, to walk, you know, sometimes we don't remember. You know, this past spring I slipped on a wet pavement and fell and broke my elbow, and I hadn't really realized until then what an elbow does, you know. Really quite amazing, you know, it can bend and it can swivel, it's just, and then it did it again all by itself. So amazing, really truly amazing, the power that is with us in every moment. It's just incredible. We were speaking of poetry, we were just last weekend together with a small group of people sharing the opening of poetry with Robert Bly, who some of you may know, another lover of Rumi. And we were at a beautiful conference facility near the ocean in California, Isla Mar. And it's a place where, you know, several groups can be there at once. And we were a little small group. And one of the other groups that was there was a large group of a couple hundred people who were all studiers of the zebrafish. And you may not know about the zebrafish. I happened to come across the mystery of this zebrafish myself because I was, over the last couple years, putting together an anthology of nature writings from many different traditions, and but based in Quranic principles, sort of looking through the lens of the Quran and bringing together beautiful nature writings from around the world and different faith traditions as well. And I happened to come across an article about the zebrafish, so it was amazing to be there with such a large group of people, all lovers of the zebrafish. And here we were, you know, reading the poetry of Rumi and other poets and Kabir, and you know, the amazing thing about the zebrafish is that people have recognized that it's one of the creatures within this creation that if you cut out half of its heart, it can regenerate it cell by cell. Incredible. Yeah. And the extent to which, you know, within the human capacity, there is that also on a deep level, that in the midst of, you know, very difficult, horrible things that happened, that in a way might cut out almost half our heart, that we still are given the capacity to regenerate and renew. And this human spirit has such a depth, such an opening. So this prayer Mevlana begins book four of his Masnavi with this prayer. May God have mercy on those who lead the way and those who come behind and those who fulfill their vows and those who seek to fulfill them. With his grace and bounty, his great benefits and favors. For he is the best object of petition and the noblest object of hope. And God is the best protector and the most merciful of those who show mercy and the best of friends and the best of heirs and the best replacer of what has been consumed, and provider for those devoted who sow and till the soil of good works. And God bless Muhammad and all the prophets and messengers. Amen. O Lord of created beings. And there's so much just in this small passage. Mevlana lived within the universe of the Quran, within the example of the Prophet Muhammad. And within that universe, there is an opening that includes all the prophets and messengers, as Kabir was speaking about last night. In the West here, you know, because of the way sometimes media presents things, often we're not aware of that. And forces in this world move towards separation, towards isolation, in a passage in the Quran, it talks about those who separate into sects, each, sort of clinging to their own and, separating away from the others rather than recognizing this oneness, this beauty within which we're all held. And yet so many messengers, have come, those who have opened, who have listened deeply and recognized this oneness, within which we are held, and keep reminding us, open to that, that nourishes us all is the place of peace. And how can we support each other within that and strengthen each other within that? That he, she, in the Quran, there is this understanding that the divine is far beyond anything we could possibly try to describe, and so far beyond gender. Sometimes in translation it was presented as he, but it's understood that it's he, she, it, nothingness, everything, And when Muhammad was dying, his last words were to the highest, the greatest friend, the greatest companion, highest companion. So there is that sense in which even though the divine is so far beyond anything we might possibly describe or express, yet is the most intimate, the closest friend. There's another verse in the Quran that says, he is closer than your jugular vein. And even beyond the sense of one's, closer than one's vein or artery, you know, there is this sense even closer than one's life. You know, so we are given these bodies. You know, we come into this manifestation here in this realm where we can touch, and yet we pass beyond that again. And still, that friend is our companion. We come from that source and we're returning to that source. And on the plane journey here yesterday, we happened to meet a lovely soul in the airport. We were carrying our instruments, and he looked and, you know, questioned what they were, and we told him, and he said, "Oh, I play the flute." And he was from India originally, so he played the Indian flute of the other India. And his father was also a very apparently well-known flute player, but he's also a software Cisco person. So there are many realms that happen at once, you know. But we began to speak, you know, about flutes and music and makams, and how, you know, in Indian music there are the ragas, and it was so beautiful. He was saying that when he was young, he used to go with his father to, you know, play concerts and things too, and he remembers well when they had a concert, you know, that was all day long and into the night, and so it gave them the possibility of playing the different ragas that are the raga of that moment, because there's a different tonality for the different moments of the day. So there's a morning raga and the midday raga, afternoon raga, evening raga, and the night raga. And he said his turn came at 2 a.m. Oh, so beautiful. And, you know, within the Turkish tradition of music, there's a makam system, it's called. And so in, rather than the scales that we have in the Western music, there is a very subtle kind of scale or makam that has ninth note intervals rather than just a half note, you know, sharp or flat that we're used to. And also depending on whether it's, you know, from where you go up and down in that passage of notes, that it becomes a different makam. And makam is, it means state also. So within the Sufi tradition, there is a sense in which we come to different states of being. And you may touch on that state for a while. You may taste it. This word tasting we use a lot. It's that sense of taste, the flavor, the quality. So you may taste of that state. And that's called a hal, a momentary touching of that. And then when it settles, when you become accustomed to being in that state, it becomes a station, a more fully makam, where you find your abode. So in the journey of this soul that we are, the term nafs is used to refer to the soul. And this nafs has many qualities. It may pass through many states and journey from one station to another. It's spoken of in one system of reflection as passing through seven stages or makams, beginning with the nafs al-amara. And this is the commanding self. And I think we'll all recognize this, you know, that part of ourselves that, you know, says, "Yes, I want this," you know, clings to a particular desire or pushes us in a particular direction. And, you know, greed can arise from that clinging. that sort of raw part that we find ourselves in sometimes. But little by little, something may awaken, and we move into the makam of the nafsa lawama, the repentant self, that recognizes, oh, right, there's someone else here. Mm. And with the friend, may I be with the friend and move from that place. So in that moment is spoken of as tauba, of turning. The heart turns, the soul turns, and recognizes its creator. The creator, the evolver, the bestower of form, that is continually moving through us in every moment. So the heart turns, the tauba, and we recognize this other aspect of the soul, of the self, the repentant self, and begin to open our eyes in that way. And then we can move into the stage of the nafs al-mulhime, the inspired self that begins to listen and begins to hear, some other quality. And as we mentioned last night, the hadith of the Prophet Muhammad, the saying of the Prophet, surely the faithful are mirrors for the faithful. And it's also understood that the faithful is a mirror for the faithful, in that we, as the faithful, are the mirror of the faithful. So that one who is the inspirer of faith, we as human beings have the capacity to be the reflection of the divine qualities, of all of that beauty and strength. We are such multifaceted creatures, and such beauty is possible through this human soul. The qualities, as we reflected with that verse beginning, my mercy overwhelms my wrath. Within the Islamic framework, it's recognized that there are these sort of overriding areas of qualities, the jamal, the beauty, and the jalal, the strong or stringent qualities as well. So there is the recognition of God's power and just the incredible strength that we see moving sometimes through nature, sometimes through different aspects of life, that in a moment may be experienced as a wrath, but yet can bring an incredible mercy and intimacy to us. So the soul can open to greater seeing of that dance, and that inspiration, and that subtlety, that God is subtle beyond all knowing. And then as we open more to that sensitivity, we come to a place of greater content with our sustainer and with the sustenance that comes, the nafs al-mutmaina. And we can touch more and more moments of that gratitude, for so much that is given within ourselves, within relationship, within this incredible creation that we've been given to inhabit, and seek to become better caretakers, both of this creation and of each other, of the souls that we're given to relate with, and also of ourselves. And the soul moves. This song that is played through us to a place of being pleased with all that comes from our Lord. Until we become more and more pleasing to our sustainer, that beauty becomes more manifest through us, and we are welcomed as Sanaf Salmardie, and then Safie, or Kamile, or Zakie. So there's these different terms that all speak about that soul that then is purified and can truly reflect the divine. And so often in the Quran, you hear this phrase of those who have faith and do the good, do the deeds of wholeness, of rightfulness, and continually these are paired. So we find in that a mirror of, we're not rooted in one place. God says we could have created them all as one soul, and in the beginning we were as one soul, and yet we were diversified in all of this myriad creation, so that we might, as it said, sort of run the race for the good, so that we might do the best in every moment, just open to that listening, to receiving the guidance that is continually being poured, to see how to let the divine manifest through us and help to rectify what might be, what might have gone askew. For that one is the one who sets things right. We can sometimes fall into a place of feeling, I know what is right. And then sometimes that is dissolved for us, and we can open more clearly to in a moment, the creative unfolding of what might be the rebalancing within ourselves or within relationship or within our world. And we recognize such a need now in all of those realms. So we read again this prayer. May God have mercy on those who lead the way and those who come behind, and those who fulfill their vows, and those who seek to fulfill them. With his grace and bounty, his great benefits and favors. For he is the best object of petition, and the noblest object of hope. And God is the best protector, and the most merciful of those who show mercy, and the best of friends, and the best of heirs, and the best replacer of what has been consumed, and provider for those devoted who sow and till the soil of good works. And God bless Muhammad and all the prophets and messengers. Amen, O Lord of created beings. one passage of his Masnavi, Rumi speaks about how we're continually moved through this dynamic of opening and closing and opening and closing, and that we're given these two wings of fear, in a sense, and hope, and that it's with both of these that we fly. And sometimes in translations of the Quran, it talks about the fear of God, and, you know, we talk about that, but the word that's often used is taqwa, which really has more to do with the awe and consciousness of the divine, and the sense in which one is continually reawakening to that presence and wishing to reside in that presence and watching, you know, the raqib. This is one of the qualities of God, the watcher, who is standing in watchfulness to see when something may go out of alignment or awry, to bring it back, you know, to watch in ourselves, you know, when the grasping may arise and let go, you know, and just return. Not wanting to disturb that intimate relationship with the divine. Holding that, you know, continually, and hoping in that, and placing our hope in that intimate relationship. So Ivana tells a funny story about a lover who was wishing to be with his beloved, and he was writing letters, and finally a moment came, this, you know, he realized the earlier times when there weren't, you know, the moments of intermingling so easily that we have now. And finally the moment came when this young man was able to have a few moments alone with his beloved beside the river. And she turned to him, and he pulled out his letters and started reading his letters to her. So may we continually just come back into the moment, into the freshness of the moment with the beloved, you know, letting everything fall aside, even those beautiful constructions that we may create in expectation. You know, just open to the moment. So let's take a few moments just to open again with the breath. Being with the beloved in this moment. This word Evala, we use sometimes almost like an amin. Means what comes from God is good. So in any moment we may say Evala, or in our tradition, if it's the one who is filling the role of the sheikh asks something of the dervish. In response, the dervish says, "Evala." In other words, "Yes, I will do this. I will. It is a goodness that's flowing." and whatever comes to us in our lives, we just turn and say, Evala. You know, we will work with this. You know, we will be with this, open to the goodness in it. The Prophet Muhammad had a prayer that, whatever comes, may God protect me from the harm in it and give me the good in it. It was so wonderful to come through the front door this morning and see the sign saying, Rumi alive. Such a miraculous unfolding, you know, in every moment. And that quality of soul that Rumi was, is, you know, is alive. And in any moment we can just pause and reconnect and then continue through our movement with that connection. One of the beauties of the Islamic tradition is this pattern of the five daily prayers that Kabir was speaking about last night. And within many traditions, you know, there is this sense of punctuation of the day and night with pausing for prayer. And what a gift that is to remember that. And whether or not one chooses to use a particular form with which to do that, even, you know, just taking a moment and pausing in one's day, you know, if one is at work, you know, even sitting at one's desk, one could just pause for a moment, you know, and just be with the breath and remember, you know, that there is one who is breathing us and connecting us. You know, how amazing to be flown on a plane from a place called California to a place called Alabama to find other souls, you know, lovers of spirit. You know, and yet, all around us, you know, in every moment, there are souls yearning in their own way. And, you know, whether we're just walking down the street passing someone or in a store or at work, we can recognize that, you know, within another human being, no matter who they are or where they are. And even within the other aspects of creation, within the kingdom of the plants, there's such beautiful spirits and voices to be sensed. And even within, you know, this realm of seemingly hard objects, you know, it was said that the Prophet Muhammad used to hear rocks speak. And there was a beautiful moment when he was sharing in his community. They had, I don't know if you know some of the history, but they had, well, maybe I'll begin at one beginning. It's always hard to say where something began, you know. But there was a moment when he was in a cave outside of Mecca, and he used to take retreat time just connecting with spirit, seeking for a deeper connection with that source that he recognized as sustaining him. And he was in the cave and suddenly heard a voice saying, read or recite. And he said, but I cannot. He was not someone who was able to read and write. And he felt this embrace and the command again, read. And again he said, I cannot. And again he felt this crushing embrace and this voice saying, read in the name of your sustainer who created humankind from a connecting cell. So there was this sense of this huge impulse to share this source of creation. And the word alak, that sometimes in English has strangely been translated as created humankind from a blood clot, really is this infinitesimal connecting cell. Almost like, you know, someone said, you know, like, you know how Velcro got created? It actually, someone had the inspiration. They were looking at a burdock seed. You know how the burdock burr has that kind of little hook on it? And so it clings to your clothes, you know, you walk by and suddenly it's there. There is this sense in alak that the human being was connected from the very beginning, you know, that we have that connection and it's always there. So this was the beginning of the revelation of the Quran. And in that moment, as these verses began to come, Muhammad was just overcome, and he went home quickly and to his wife, Khadija, a beautiful soul, somewhat his elder, who had actually proposed marriage to him. And she was a businesswoman who had caravans and recognized his trustworthiness. And he threw himself in her lap and said, cover me. I'm afraid I may be going insane. And she said, Muhammad, a man like you doesn't go mad. This is something else. And she called her cousin, actually Waraka, who was familiar with the Christian tradition. And he came and Muhammad shared with him what had been happening. And he said, Muhammad, this is like what came to the prophets of the Abrahamic tradition. And I wish that I could live long enough to see full unfolding. He was an old man. But so things unfolded, and in the sharing there was difficulty. People came to the faith and others were persecuted. And as you know, in the early days there was a great deal of persecution, and they just simply kept with their faith, and even to the point of starvation. They were exiled within the community of Mecca to a certain district, and people were forbidden to trade with them. And every now and then someone would just let loose a camel with provisions into the district to help sustain them. So it was a long time, years, almost 13 years, that they went through these difficulties until finally the revelation came that they might defend themselves. And they were given friendship from the actually Jewish tribes in Medina, who first welcomed them and asked Muhammad to help them in balancing their community. They saw his capacity. And so they immigrated. And there are many stories, but I'll try to come back to where I came from. So they ended up going to Medina and being welcomed there, and they were a small community and joined together with some of the Jewish tribes and other Arab tribes there. And they built a small mosque with palm trunks, you know, and thatched the women and the men together helping. And there was a moment, coming back to that moment, when Muhammad was standing to share. And in the beginning of this small mosque, he used to lean sometimes against this one palm tree trunk. And then someone thought, oh, well, we'll build him, you know, a place where, you know, a little bit of a bench. And so there was this first moment where he had more of a platform to stand on and something, you know, sort of more of a pulpit kind of thing to lean on. And when he first stood up there and didn't lean against the palm trunk, all of a sudden there was an incredible moaning sound. And the prophet said, ah, it is this palm trunk. You know? And it was as though, he said, as though the sound of a baby, you know, expressing its longing. So even, you know, these things that may seem more solidly substantial, you know, also have their voice if we can listen. And one of the beauties that I find in the Quran is the recognition of nature. You know, there's so many passages that say, witness, you know, witness the stars, witness all of this beauty, witness the earth and how, you know, that land that is parched can be opened in springs and renewed with fruitfulness. And witness the bees, how they make this beautiful honey that is a source of healing and nourishment. And it was a lovely moment, actually, when Muhammad entered the city of Medina, and there were many people who wanted to welcome him, and, you know, they came up to him and said, oh, come stay at my house. You know, and they were very sensitive too in those days, and to alliances, you know, and how, you know, being in a certain place would then mean such and such, you know, or whatnot. And so Muhammad said, Kaswa, she will decide, his camel. So he let loose the reins of his camel and just let her wander. And so she went, you know, just walking down the village street, you know, the dirt pathways. And she went and paused for a moment. And then she kept going and started to settle. And then she rose and then kept going a little farther. And finally, she settled down. And that's where he stayed. So there is a recognition of a deep wisdom within all of creation. And we can share, you know, recognition of the passages of all the creatures, you know, within ourselves. It's said that, you know, rather than being, you know, a small part of creation, also the human being can contain all of creation. There's a beautiful saying of God that's conveyed through the Prophet Muhammad called a hadith qudsi, which means a holy saying. It's not an actual verse of the Quran, but is as though God is speaking. God saying, I was a hidden treasure and I loved to be known. So I created the two worlds in order that my treasure of generosity and loving kindness might be known. So there is this capacity within the human being. It's also said that I offered, God says, I offered the trust to the mountains and to the heavens, and yet they could not accept, but the human being accepted the trust. And Mevlana often speaks in some of his passages of this moment when each soul said yes. In the time before the time before the time, when before we were poured into these bodies, before we were poured into this form of creation, we stood before our Creator in spirit. And our Creator said, am I not your Lord? And we each said, yes, truly. So we're continually called back to that moment, to remember that moment, that day of Elast, as it's spoken of, the day of the covenant. And that this mysterious unfolding occurs. We are birthed into existence, and we pass from this existence. When we were speaking with that lovely flute player from India, he was quoting Kabir and we were quoting Mevlana, you know, back and forth. And, he mentioned a moment when Kabir was passing through a graveyard, and he said, look at all these graves of people who once thought they were indispensable. And Mevlana, in one of his passages of the Masnavi, speaks about, you know, what is all this competition as we're all moving back through the same door? And in another passage, he speaks so beautifully of how, you know, the infant within the womb, you know, is so cozy, you know, held within that nurturing fluid, you know, protected. Amazing how it's balanced so well there, you know, so that bumps and don't jostle it too much, because it's held within this beautiful nourishing fluid. Everything it needs is provided. Mysterious. And it grows. Until that moment comes when it's ready to come into another world. And Mevlana talks about how, you know, the infant in that moment is resisting, you know, I have to leave? I have to move from this wonderful, cozy place where I'm held and everything's provided? Mm-hmm. and it's pushed. You know, there is some pain there. There's compression as it's pushed through this passage. And then it's birthed into such an expanse. You know, and it's given the capacity to breathe on its own. And given another way to be fed. You know, and so many tastes. Amazing. Just amazing. And it can begin to move. And stretch arms and legs. You know? And it begins to have a voice. Really amazing. And then we go through this life, you know, this incredible passage of experience. So many possibilities. Each of us is given gifts to discover, capacities to discover. Gifts to share in so many ways. And then a moment comes when we're called back, but into a new world. It's as though Mevlana says again, you know, this infant human being that has now grown with all these capacities, yet is about to be birthed again into a whole nother world that we can't imagine. Just as when we were that tiny baby in the womb, we couldn't imagine this world of color and scents into which we were to be born. That also as we move through what some call death, Shamsi Tabriz refers it to it as an immigration. As though we've been held in this cramped house, you know, where it's hard to fully stretch. You know, and then suddenly we immigrate to this whole new country, you know, where we can breathe more fully. So it was it's the voices of the prophets, the saints, those like Rumi and Muhammad, Jesus, Moses, Buddha, you know, all of these souls who recognized, you know, that farther country and brought it here. Someone after the gathering last night was asking a question about the resurrection, and Kabir shared the story of a moment when they asked Ali. He was one of the close companions of Muhammad, and actually the one who breathed that whisper into the well, and from whom many of the Sufi lineages trace their origins through Muhammad and through the source. That someone asked Ali about what the resurrection was, and he said, "You ask about the resurrection of the resurrection?" So there was that sense that, and he said, even if that moment of resurrection arrived, my certainty would not be greater. So we're being called, you know, continually to just open, you know, to listen, to witness that resurrection, that that opening, that return in every moment. So many qualities open. And the truth that's within a human being may take, you know, different shapes and different aspects, you know, within our lives. And yet, at the source of it all, there is this one truth of that presence, that overwhelming mercy that holds us.